Paul Rogers from the Northside Partnership. Good morning, Paul, and nice to chat to you again and welcome to the programme.
Thanks, Tony. Good morning to you. Thanks for having us on again.
You are more than welcome, Paul. And before, as I always do with the Northside Partnership people when I have them on, a huge thanks to Sarah Classy, who organises these things for us here at Near FM. Without her, we'd be lost. Paul, we spoke, I suppose, would it be 2 months ago we chatted? And we were would we have been a week, maybe 2 weeks into the big lockdown at the time? And you were explaining to us how the Northside Partnership and the various projects within it had adapted really, really quickly to lockdown. Now, we've moved on a bit from that. So where are you at the moment, Paul?
I suppose, like most organisations at this stage now, we've been sort of implementing a lot of the return to the workplace protocols, as we're calling them, not return to work, as we were working throughout the lockdown and that, but a lot of changes to premises, buying in a lot of equipment, trying to ensure that we have all of the systems, policies, procedures, all of that kind of stuff in place before we begin opening up offices again to the public for on an appointment basis. So we're aiming to be open to the public, but purely on an appointments basis. So if anybody wants to ring in and make an appointment, they can do so from the 20th of July, in keeping with the government's original timeline. So there's been a lot of work going on. We've been assisting other community organisations as well, because there's a huge amount of preparation. We've had changes to office layouts. We've had to procure all that equipment, sneeze guards, masks, all the stuff people are becoming familiar with now. We've had to train staff in the return to work protocol. The government issued guidance on that, I think it was back in early June, which is very welcome. But every organisation has to have their own version of that, and you know, it's to account for the local offices and stuff. So there's been a lot of work going on with staff. We've also been trying to continue to beef up our IT capability to continue to support remote working for staff, because I think, like most organisations, we're practicing social distancing and trying to manage how many staff we have on site, and make sure that we're not over capacity in terms of the number of staff that are on site, and maintaining all that kind of guidance. So it's been challenging, but as I said, the last time, I don't think we haven't been able to address any challenge that hasn't come at us. There was a lot of work that we had been doing back in the early days of lockdown in regards to food distribution to vulnerable families and stuff like that. But that sort of work now has scaled back quite a bit, as obviously people now, we've come out of the lockdown, people are more mobile, they're able to get around, so reliance on that kind of support has been reducing. So. I think we're about to complete our mid-year review for one of the programs we do, the Social Inclusion Community Activation Program, and we're slightly ahead of our targets for mid-year, despite the fact that we were through the lockdown, which I think is a testament to the staff and the flexibility the staff have shown in terms of reaching out to people and ensuring that we're there to provide support and guidance throughout this challenging time. So it's been interesting.
Paul, as the man, I suppose, at the end of the day, with overall control and calls the shots, and while what you are telling us this morning is very reassuring, it's very upbeat, it's very, forward-looking and positive, I think is the word I would use. How cognizant do you have to be that at the flick of a switch, we may have to go back to the way things were 2 or 3 months ago?
Absolutely cognizant, I think. I think if you look at the global situation, and I'm always keeping an eye to that, when we first kind of, when the coronavirus first came to Ireland back in February, I think, you know, it was in a European global context, there was probably less than 100,000 cases. Now we've just gone past 13 million cases, and yesterday the WHO announced that there were just over 230,000 cases in the one day. So I'm absolutely mindful that, you know, it's not gone away. It's quite likely that there will be further outbreaks in Ireland, particularly given foreign travel and people coming from back from abroad or people coming in from abroad. And so we have to be fully prepared that if there is a local or regional lockdown again, that that air services will be available, and if not, sorry, they'll be fully available, but available to work better, if you know what I mean. That's why we've been putting so much focus on developing air technological capacity as much as we can. We've recently completed a big move over to Office 365, so we've had quite a fair bit of IT IT projects implemented over the last couple of months. And that's with that in mind, that if we have to enter some sort of regional lockdown again, that we will be in a better place to do so should that happen again. And that is, I think, you know, the global situation is actually even more worrying than it was back in February.
Yeah, I would totally agree with you there, because some of the figures coming out from some places are absolutely mind-boggling, and it beggars belief, actually, Paul, now on a totally different topic, but I mean, it actually beggars belief that at this stage, okay, we don't know everything about it, but we know a hell of a lot more about it worldwide than we did the last time we spoke, and yet the numbers don't, the current numbers certainly don't suggest that people are learning from it. I mean, we can lift restrictions and successfully, and it has been done in countries that restrictions have been lifted successfully, but I wonder, without naming any country in particular, are we looking at a situation where there wasn't a proper lockdown imposed in the first place in some of these countries, and that's why the numbers are expanding exponentially?
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with you. I mean, there is the challenge of getting the balance between, you know, the health and well-being of society and the economy. We fully appreciate, like, the government here have been phenomenal in terms of trying to the pandemic payments and that have kept people going throughout. And there is the pressure to try and get back to some semblance of normality in that. But I think, you know, what's, since we last spoke, there's been a lot more information coming forward about this disease. It's not just a respiratory disease. It goes after a lot of other systems within the body. And potentially there's longer term impact on people, even in terms of their own recovery when they've got the disease and that, which is quite worrying, because we don't know yet what the legacy will be of COVID-19 long after people have had it. So obviously trying not to get it in the first place is a key. You know, trying to protect oneself and protect one's family and so, the Irish community. I think last time we were speaking, we were saying, yeah, we're an island nation, and that's one of the strengths that we have. But, Jeff, we're a globalised, we're one of the more globalised economies in the world. And there's a, you know, trying to maintain that global linkage, there's a fine balance between protecting society and you know, trying to sustain some sort of economic development and growth and keeping people in employment. So it certainly doesn't help, you know, the virus is now, we know, in North and South America, it's hugely damaging over there, and yet we're well connected to those communities, so to those countries, so there are challenges.
Yeah, I know, Paul, it's getting into an area like that we should be chatting about. I was going to say over a pint in a pub, but we can't do that. We were initially, I think, supposed to be able to do that next Monday, but I wouldn't hold my breath on that one at the moment, though, unless things change again. Paul, the last time we spoke, and I mean, you spoke very eloquently, as always, but I think it's fair to say that both you and your staff in the Northside Partnership were on a learning curve, I think is the best way of putting it. Now, seeing as we're down the road probably 2 months more, I suppose nearly 3 months from when we last spoke, we'll say that a lot of what you have put in place for the Northside Partnership and what you have maintained going forward now, and I'm not talking about going forward from now to Christmas, I'm talking about over the next 5 or 10 years, is there things that you have put in place and that your team have put in place that, and hopefully we'll see the back of COVID sooner rather than later, and that when we do see the back of the coronavirus, that you will say, that's staying, that worked our treat, there's no reason that we should get rid of that?
Yeah. Well, I think a key thing has been when we had to move to remote working, there was a lot of staff were suddenly being asked to do things like develop online content for some programs that we previously wouldn't have done. I suppose you call that distance learning. And that's certainly something we've been doing a lot more of in the last 2 months. And there are benefits, there's pros and cons to it. There is a very real issue with regard to the digital divide. There are people across the catchment here that wouldn't necessarily have access to computers or smart devices or that would enable them to benefit from that kind of support. But it's definitely something we are looking to continue and to build our capability in that area. But that issue of the digital divide is something we also need to look at, I think, in terms of trying to support young people that perhaps don't have access to a computer. It certainly struck me when we started asking staff to work remotely, there's an assumption that everybody has access to a computer, but a lot of people aren't using computers at home anymore. They're using tablets or smart devices. And they're not probably the best devices for productivity, I suppose you want to say, for doing your homework on a tablet as opposed to having access to a computer with Word or Excel or PowerPoint is a completely different thing. So I think we need to look at that. But certainly we're looking to continue doing the work in terms of building online capability for remote learning. And I suppose, working remotely as well as an option in terms of work-life balance. So I think that's something we all have to look at. A key challenge for us will be, of course, ensuring that we're compliant with all the contracts that we have, that funders are okay with us doing that kind of work as well. So there are definitely features or lessons we've learned from this period that we will be applying going forward and trying to... We use it sometimes here in relation to people, that when we're working with people, we're trying to help people move from surviving to thriving. It kind of relates to companies as well, community organizations. We survived in moving to remote working. We want to move to thriving in remote working, if that makes sense.
Paul, anecdotally now, and it's just something that struck me when you were talking there about people that may not have access to computers at home. How has the availability, or should I say maybe correctly, put more correctly, the inability to access broadband affected? Because I know that because of your location, a lot of your staff may be based in North County Dublin. And we hear anecdotally that, I mean, we hear no problems. I mean, our internet is extremely good. But you can drive 5 minutes out the road to Swords, and you can't even make a phone call in parts of it. So how has the broadband availability affected the staff?
We've staff have worked from both remote and office. So every week staff have been in, kind of, there's a mix of both. I think most people are reasonably well covered. I mean, I'm one of those people. I live in North County Dublin. I live in Balbriggan. But yet I don't have access to e-fibre or broadband. I have kilobyte upload speeds and stuff like that. The real issue is when my wife or my son or, a number of people are working online and all of a sudden you've got contention rates and stuff like that. So doing things like Zoom calls and stuff like that was challenging. You get through those kind of things. You can prepare. You can, you can bring home documentation that you need to work on and stuff like that. But it's certainly an issue for people that... don't make the assumption that everybody has access to broadband in the first place. Even getting technology, computers or laptops to students, which is some of the work that we had been doing, it doesn't necessarily mean they have access to Wi-Fi or broadband to be able to access their work online. And with the libraries being closed, that people know you can go to the library and get access to free Wi-Fi. So there is a case maybe for sort of Wi-Fi hubs and that, where people can get access to Wi-Fi if they don't have it at home. So there are a number of things that we need to look at there. And I think one of the things we'd be advocating, I know we've been working with some private sector companies and that, trying to get donations of laptops, and we have got some. But there's a sense that they prefer to give their laptops to organisations than to individuals. A laptop can transform a young person's life, particularly now where if they're going on to third level, it's going to be challenging. If they don't have access to technology, because so many of the third level colleges and that are going to distance learning as part of their delivery mechanism. And there's other challenges in there. I think I've done a lot of distance learning in the past myself. It's quite a lonely place. There's a lot to be said for being in a classroom with students around you, the peer support or the peer pressure, your other students telling you what they've done, you're going to go, oh, I haven't done that, I need to do that or whatever. So that kind of space is really, really important, but it doesn't transfer to the online learning space. And I think, I'd be concerned for younger people maybe that are going into that space for the first time that they don't have the discipline for it. So we're trying to develop ways ourselves that we can sort of bridge some of that lack of connectivity and help people connect and support each other.
Yeah, and of course, Paul mentioned there about the libraries being closed, and some of the Dublin City libraries have reopened, and just after 12 o'clock I'll be talking to Louise Tobin from the Coolock Library, and we'll be explaining what the differences are now when you go in there. So, Paul, with that in mind, if I was to go into the Northside Partnership last January, and if I was to go into the Northside Partnership today or tomorrow, what differences would I see now as a customer?
Well, the first thing I'd ask is if people want to come in, that they ring maybe first and make an appointment. Because obviously we want to manage the flow of people through the organisation and protect the health and well-being of participants coming in and their staff and that. So we're putting everybody into an appointment slot. And if you can ring 848-5630, we can connect you up with one of our staff members to offer support and see if you need for a one-to-one appointment. But then when you come in, before you come in, we'll be contacting you just to do a health check, make sure that you're not displaying any symptoms of cold or flu or potentially coronavirus and that. And if you are feeling unwell or whatever, we'll simply reschedule that appointment for you. When you do come in, we have, you'll see we have sanitization stations coming in. We ask everybody to, take a mask. We're asking all participants to come in to wear a mask for one-to-one meetings with staff. So our staff members will be wearing a mask, the participant will be wearing a mask, and then we have public meeting zones in the offices here, and we have sneeze guards and privacy screens in each area. So we're doing everything we possibly can to protect the health and well-being of the participants coming into the organisation and also our staff members on site. So we also have a leaflet on our website which will sort of explain what would happen when you come in for a meeting, and we have some photographs in that leaflet as well, just to give people a sense of what the new facilities look like when you come into the office, and that to try and allay any fears or concerns that people might have.
And of course, Paul, the whole purpose of our chat this morning and the message we want to get out there is that the Northside Partnership is open for business and looking for you to contact them should you have any desire to, or any wish to, or want to participate in any of their programs or upcoming programs. Paul, with that in mind, can you give me the contact details, please, once more, for anybody who wants to avail of the absolute wonderful, and I mean wonderful, range and total spectrum of courses and facilities that you provide for the people of the area?
Absolutely, Tony, and thanks again for the opportunity. And just, I might just say, I'm mindful that a lot of people may have been put on furlough or have lost jobs or whatever. So our local employment service is here. We're ready to take referrals if anybody needs some support. So the number to ring is 848-5630. And if you contact our reception team here, they'll talk to you, find out what perhaps is the best support for you, and make an appointment to meet somebody to talk about that.
Yeah, and I think, Paul, in fairness, that's probably the best thing to do, is give one number, let it be a catch-all. You ring that, and yes, the person that answers the phone may not be able to give you the answer you're looking for, but immediately they will be able to put you in contact with the section which can. And that number, as Paul gave you there, is 01-848-5630. Paul Rogers, CEO of the Northside Partnership. Paul, always a pleasure. Thank you so much for your time this morning, and continued good luck. And look, we can't thank you enough for all the work that the Northside Partnership do for the area of the people. The people of the area.
Thanks very much, Tony. You're very welcome. Talk to you again.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye.